On this episode of Still Loading, it's a holiday bonus. Hello all, it's Josh, and welcome back to this episode of Still Loading. Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays, everyone. It's, you know, a day or two before Christmas when this comes out, but still, nonetheless, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays. Thank you all once again for listening. It really means a lot to me. We're about to wrap up the year. I have one more episode in store for you next week for kind of like a year wrap-up, but seriously, thank you all for listening, and I'll get a little bit more nostalgic and sentimental next episode, but for now, just a sincere thank you. For this holiday episode, I was lucky enough to get another interview. For this week's episode, I'm interviewing a chiptune musician by the name of Robot Prinz, also his real name is Philip, though, and you're going to hear a little bit of confusion as to how I'm supposed to refer to him as the episode goes on, but the main reason I'm recording this intro before we get into the actual interview is because there's some technical difficulties, some audio difficulties. It's very easy to understand Philip, but it's a little hard to understand me, and that's mainly because of Skype. I'm still working and figuring out the kinks. I've been trying to use my nicer microphones with Skype, and it just does not work. But if I use my headset, which is less, which isn't quite as good quality, it works perfectly. So I've been getting mixed results because sometimes I'll record with my nice microphone on Skype and everything's fine. And then other times I'll record with a nice microphone and you get what you have here, which is kind of like a gravelly mess on my half. You can still understand me. It's still listenable, but just wanted to give you guys a heads up. I am aware of the issue. I'm trying to fix it, but Philip sounded great. So once again, if you're listening to this afterwards, Robot Prinz, thank you. Sincerely, thank you for doing this for me. It was a lot of fun getting to talk to you over the course of the interview. So yeah, with that said, let's dive right into it. And without further ado, here's my interview with Robot Prinz. Hello all, and welcome back to this episode of Still Loading. For this week's episode, I have a surprise for you. As I get older, I always find that, as with anyone, I should say, as they get older, their music tastes change. You know, I started out listening to bands that most would consider awful, like Creed, and moved on to heavy metal and moved on to a bunch of different things. And lately in life, I've been finding myself enjoying chiptune music, and you guys should probably be able to tell that because every ending of like all the post episode music for my podcasts have been some version of chiptune music or chiptune remixes or dance remixes of chiptune music. And with that in mind, a new friend of mine, Robot Prinz, I have Philip, aka Philip. I don't know what you want me to call you exactly. I'm just going to call you Philip because I feel weird saying Robot Prinz over and over again. But he is a chiptune composer who lives in Japan but is Swedish, correct?
That is correct.
So, Philip, say hi, or Phil. I'll just say Phil.
That's what they call me. Some of my American friends in Japan. It's in Sweden. My nickname would be like Fille, but a lot of Americans call me Phil. Other than that, it's Philip. And then in Japanese, Philip would be like Filippo, mm-hmm. And Robot Prinz, here is the cool one. Robot Prinz in Japanese, the short version of it is Robopuri. And okay. These days, some people call me Robopuri. So are you familiar with YMCK?
With who, sorry? With what?
It's a chiptune group in Japan called YMCK.
No, I did see your fourth EP was by Cheap Beats, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's the only one that I'm even somewhat familiar with, but I haven't listened to any of their catalog other than that album.
Do you listen to chiptune artists in general, or is it like from games or?
It started out in games and then it kind of progressed into, you know, chiptune artists in general. And I, to be fair, and just to be completely honest, I don't get a chance to listen to a lot of variety of it. Like lately I've been into your music and I've been into Malmen.
He's also Swedish.
Oh, is he?
Yeah, I think so.
I really like his stuff too. It's very, like sad nostalgic but happy nostalgic. I don't know how to put a description on it, but you're a chiptune composer, and yes. I guess my first question to kind of start this whole thing off is, what got you into chiptune composing? Like, what got you into chiptune music?
So when I was a kid, I was playing a lot of video games, and that's mm-hmm. where it started, I suppose. My older brother, he had a NES, and so my favorite game was Mega Man,
mm-hmm.
and Mega Man 3, to be specific. And then mm-hmm. When I was like 7, he sold it because he wanted a Macintosh, and that was a very sad day for me. So... But then I found out, you can use emulators on a computer and play them. So I did that 4 years later, and then I was listening to Mega Man again, and just that sound, it was, I don't know, it's something, it's such a simple sound, you know, those synthesizers, square sounds or pulse, triangle, mm-hmm. but that sound was always... appealing to me, I started playing guitar when I was 12.
Okay. And
I've gone through like a lot of music. When I was a kid, I was listening to like Beatles, and then I was listening to Oasis, and then I got into heavy metal, Metallica, Dream Theater, and then I started listening.
The same progression as me.
Oh yeah, no, I was thinking that. Yeah, I understand that. Then I started listening to like all kinds of music, and just, you know, jazz, funk, whatever. And then I started composing, and that's when I ran into this chiptune group called YMCK. They're Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And band leader, he has made a free software.
Really?
Where you can make this kind of music. It's very, very simple. It's a VST plugin called Magical 8-Bit Plug. So I downloaded that, put it on, I used GarageBand at the time, and okay. I started making some simple tracks. And that's how I started making chiptune. Before that, I was like making rock or metal or something jazzy or something fusion-ish. So it's, yeah.
And wouldn't you, I would say that maybe that even that what you started at with, you know, with rock and composing rock and jazz and fusion music kind of has creeped its way, not creeped in a bad way, but stuck back into
definitely.
Your music, because you have that Robot Prince Plays Guitar album, correct?
That's right. Oh, yeah. I so before that, I was always just making pure chiptune
mm-hmm.
albums with Robot Prince. But recently, I moved to Tokyo recently. Before that, I was living in Sendai, which is kind of far away from where stuff is happening. In Tokyo, yeah. I can actually perform live. And recently, they have invited me to shows to perform. And I was thinking, how can I perform? And I remember, yes, I play the guitar, so let's do that.
And it works out.
It works out great, yeah. It's way better than trying to be a DJ when you're not.
You know? So the I was going to go into this a little bit later, but it kind of works perfectly as a segue now. You're Swedish, but you live in Japan. So what made you move to Japan, And more, this last part's more of a comment than a question. I'm super jealous of how multilingual you are, because I can only speak English, and I really wish I spoke more than one language.
Yeah. Well, I moved to Japan because I wanted to learn Japanese.
Mm.
And learning Japanese was not that easy.
No, I believe it. I took 4 semesters of it in college, and I barely remember any of it.
Well, in Sweden, I was studying German from junior high school and high school, and 6 years, and I can like say thank you. And I can't say anything because I wasn't interested really, but I just mm-hmm. had to take those classes. But then Japanese, when I started studying Japanese, it was like a whole new world opened up for me, and I was, oh, I gotta learn this. This is so exciting. And then when I moved to Japan, and I was studying just Japanese for 2 years, and you know, watched a lot of anime and play video games and whatnot. So I had a lot of motivation to learn, not really to become anything, but it was more, I wanted to learn the language. And also, if I'm going to go to Japan, I wanted to do it when I could, and not when I get older. And I have too many stuff going on. Maybe I can't move to Japan. So I thought, okay, let's just do it.
Now, did you go over for, like, I guess you guys call it university, correct? It's not college.
Yeah, but no, it's college.
Oh, it's the same thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it's not the same, but I went there just for college. So study Japanese 2 years.
Okay.
At college. Language school is what they call it. Yeah.
So and I then you like 2 years. So, okay.
And after that, I studied music for 2 years at a college, and started working after that. So I've been in Japan for 12 years. It's pretty.
That's insane.
Yeah. Everyone says that. And they always ask me, like, how old are you? So,
well,
so I'm 32 years old.
You do not
I moved to Japan 30. When I was 19. Yeah. Oh, thanks.
No, that's crazy though. That's really incredible, because I don't know if I'd have the. So you wait. So if you're 30, you moved when you were 20, correct?
Yeah, 19.
I don't think I would have. I'm such a slow mover with everything in my life. I don't know if I would have been able to have the guts to go up and move to do that. But that's incredible. So when did you learn English in Sweden, or did you learn it when you went to Japan?
No, it's in Sweden. What Swedish and English is similar, so it's not that hard to learn. And in Sweden, about half of the shows are in English.
With
Swedish subtitles. So we watch, like when I was a kid, we were watching like Friends and all of that, and a lot of movies. So that's how we learn English. Because we study English in school, but I can't remember like studying that much or like trying to
it just
learn
came,
English.
It just came a little bit more naturally.
And you enjoy watching shows, right, on TV? Mm-hmm. So it never feels like studying, but if you watch every day, I guess it becomes the second nature. But then again, when I was in Sweden, I never talked English with anyone.
Yeah.
Why would I speak in English with my Swedish friends?
Exactly, that wouldn't make any sense. Right. Your English is pretty good, by the way.
Thank you.
No, and I apologize in advance if I say any dumb American, ignorant American things, because I don't know a lot about, you know, cultures outside of here.
That's cool.
This is everything. If I ask any question, it's purely from an inquisitive standpoint.
I understand, you know, each country is different, and in Japan, man, they have zero clue about the outside world. So it's very interesting to hear it from different countries' perspective.
What was the biggest difference? Like, was there any like culture shock moving from Sweden to Japan? Like, was it? What was there any big changes?
Yes. there was people were not speaking Swedish. That was a big one. I'm sure there was like a million things. It's almost like now when I go back to Sweden, it's like, oh, this is what Sweden is like. Like I forgot, because when you live in Sweden, you just know it things as they are, but you don't realize how different it is. So I'm sure there are millions of things.
It's just been so long, it's hard to remember them all now.
Right. One thing, my parents, they came to Japan once, and like one of the first things they said was they were surprised how polite everyone was in like stores. Like people were like bowing at you after I bought something, or like they were smiling at you. Or it's different from Sweden, where people are very down to earth and like they don't care as much what you want. Like they just, okay, here you go.
That's kind of how it is in the US. You just kind of like get the job done, you move on, you don't really to each their own type of thing.
I also went to Australia, by the way, in February, and what I found was interesting there is how, maybe this is the same in the States, but like you go to anywhere and you don't know the person, but you start a conversation just about whatever, like about the weather or about something going on. And in Japan, people would never do that.
Huh. So it's kind of funny how like like, you know, when you're going to almost like in a like a customer service air setting, people are much more polite. But if you're trying to relate to someone one on one, it's a little bit more difficult to do.
Yeah. They would not. I think a lot of, especially probably young people, they wouldn't know like what they could respond. Like, well, what should they say? Because they are more taught that they should say something.
That's interesting.
Than just being themselves. Yeah.
That's so different. I mean, I would like a little bit of that Japanese mentality in the US, but because sometimes my wife, she works in childcare and she's a teacher at a childcare center. And it's always an interesting event. I mean, I can't really say any specific stories because I don't want her to get in trouble or anything like that. Right. But she's told me some interesting things. But no, so that's crazy though. I that was one of the, like, even more than the music, like I'm always amazed when people are able to put themselves out of their comfort zone that far. And that just fascinated me when we first started corresponding and you were saying that you are Swedish, but live in Japan, that literally blew my mind.
I guess people, I haven't like put it in that information. I have it on my website, but I suppose since they know I'm from Japan, they think that I'm Japanese. A lot of people would assume that, but yeah.
So then let's kind of jump back to more towards the music now. So we already talked about what got you into chiptune composing. What are some of your musical influences? Like you said before that you liked like rock, jazz, fusion, heavy metal, but is there like any specific bands or is there any specific genre that you model your compositions after?
Yes. So as far as bands goes, the one band that really got me serious about music was Dream Theater. I'm not sure if you've heard of
them. I've heard of them. I've never listened.
It's a progressive metal band from US, from the New York area. And like the first time I heard them, I didn't really understand what they were doing. But when I started listening to their albums, it was like each time I heard something different and I couldn't just understand it right away. So it was exciting to listen to it again, to discover things. And the music I had listened to before was a very clear, easy to understand structure of songs. But in Dream Theater songs, it's you never know what's going to happen. And then I thought, oh, you can actually make songs like that. You don't have to have like the chorus and the
verse, chorus.
Yeah, bridge. Yeah. But because for them, it's like they have two different choruses or they have all these things going on. And I just thought that was so cool. And yeah, as far as composing goes, that has inspired me a lot to be free to do whatever feels right for that track, but at the same time, I mean I'm very inspired by like Japanese pop or something like that, which is pretty straightforward, but if the song is that, then that is also fine. I don't need to make it complicated.
I'm not a musician, but just an observation I've had about like Japanese, like especially J-pop music or Japanese pop music, and chiptune. It always feels like the melody is it's elevated more than almost anything else. Like American pop music does have that, but it generally like they focus. I don't know. It's not always the focus on, and that's why. And you know, even go back to like video games. Video game music now is very almost like a movie score versus like old chip tunes and stuff like that. You know, to each their own, whatever their preference is on it. But if you look at, you know, even NES chip tune compositions, they have for technical reasons they had to focus on the melody, but it almost seems like that type of thing is permeated, or maybe it always existed in Japanese pop music. Do you feel like that's true? Like there's a stronger focus on the melody than everything else?
I think that's when I was a kid and I was like playing Mega Man, I really loved the melodies, but I didn't know that was Japanese music. So I was always strong toward these kind of melodies. And I have now later found out there is one reason for melodies being this way. It is karaoke is big in Japan. So the pop industry, they want to make songs that are interesting to sing. Whereas in the States or in most of the world, it's more important that you can dance to it, so the beat is more important.
That makes so much more sense.
Yeah, that's something that maybe someone told me that, or I thought about that. But yeah, I think it's just something that I had been thinking about, because you know the J-pop songs, it's always the melody, like it's always about that. So. But I was always strong towards that, the melodies. So.
Is there any type of chiptune music that you kind of like, are drawn to? So for example, I discovered you through DJ Cutman's This Week in Chiptune. That his it's no longer, he's no longer doing the podcast anymore, but which I'm still bummed
is
about.
Is he doing something?
I mean, I don't actually know him personally. He's from he's from my area though.
Really?
Yeah, he's from the Philly area, but I know he's been working on a lot of. His music label Game Chops just came out with a Sonic remix album called Spin Dash 3, which I have not listened to just yet. I listened to the first two and I loved them, so I did buy it. I just haven't had a chance to listen to it all the way. And so I don't know. He's just focusing on a lot more stuff, I guess, with his label and with his own music. But I don't know 100%. But no,
that was a big thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And did you get a lot of listeners from it?
Oh, I suppose so. I don't know really, but I'm sure a lot of Americans listen to that, so maybe I got more attention from American listeners.
Well, he specifically did an episode on kind of like happy chiptune music, something that was a little bit more poppy and peppy, and that's when I heard your Downside Up song from the Friend Force. And
that's a track I did with a guy called Tony Lace.
And this is a question. I have a whole list of questions in front of me, but yes. This is one I did not write down. How do you collaborate with someone for chiptune music? Because when you have someone who is like a rock musician and they collaborate with someone else, you know, they either bring over their vocalist, their guitarist, and you know, they play together or they may like perform together. I guess do you take turns writing riffs or like sections of the song? Or
there are different ways you can go about it, but so it actually varies from artist to artist. So Tony Lace, for example, I was listening to his tracks, and his tracks has always really nice beat, and so I wanted to. My music is more focused on the melodies, so my melody with his beat was the idea I had. So I made like the melody and the chord structure, and then he added beat to it, and then we took turns, sort of. But I'm mixing it up. It depends on the artist and what the artist wants to do too. Most of the times it's me presenting an idea to the guy, and then they add something to it, and maybe they add another section, and then we go from there. I made a track called Kunoichi PPP, which is also on the Friend Force, and I made it with the Rimmed Craft.
Okay.
And this track was like, I made the melody, and then he did an arrangement of the melody with a beat he added to it, and then I made an arrangement of his arrangement. So it's like, that's how that track progressed, and that's basically the song. Like it's just we were arranging what we had arranged. So yeah.
Okay, that's really interesting, man. Because that's the one thing that I was never quite sure about. Because with you know either rock musicians or metal musicians or even rap artists or something like that, it's very clear how the collaboration occurred. But with chiptune music, since it's all digital music, I was always wondering, like, how was it just, I guess it would be the same though if you had just classical composers collaborating with each other, you know, if like Bach and Mozart decided to collaborate, what would that, that'd be crazy. Yeah, but
they would get together.
I don't even know if they lived at the same time.
Each their own organ.
I'm just picturing them rocking out in the cathedral.
Like this big organ. You have to like use like five horses to,
That's fun.
To trust me.
So one of the other questions I really wanted to ask was, is there any, like, do you run into any stigmas against chiptune music? Like, when other musicians find out you're a chiptune musician, is there any like negativity around that? Only reason I ask is because I remember, the only reason I ask because I remember in 2013 when Daft Punk won the Grammy for their Random Access Memories album. Granted, I know that's not chiptune, but it is electronic. There was actually a bunch of people, like at least in my friend circle, like, oh, they're just pressing buttons. I'm like, that's not what it is. It's not anywhere close. Like, all right, that's even if you can write a song, like let's say they just are a songwriting genius. Do you really want to just input all those I would assume manually or somehow, or I don't quite know how it works, but I feel like it's a lot more complicated than just what people assume it is.
I think in Japan, when I show the music to someone, a lot of the times what they say is, "Oh, this is so nostalgic. This sounds like Super Mario." Mm. Like that is the general. If they don't really care that much, or like that is just, "Oh, that's interesting." Like they're not gonna listen to it again. They're into some other music, and that's totally cool. In Sweden, I remember this guy, he plays the piano, and he said, when I was talking about chiptune, or I was talking about some old game music, and he said, "Well, that's not real music." Mega Man or something.
I would have been so mad.
Yeah, it's like, but I understand where he's coming from, because, you know, it's I can see what the problem is for some musicians when there is music is supposed to be alive, like, so for them, if you program just notes, there is no soul in it as far as like performing. It will always sound the same.
I can understand that,
but I mean, I don't think like that, of course, about chiptune.
No. And
even if people like just think it's, "Oh, that's just like some silly music or something," like, that's not, it doesn't matter that much. I think that way, or I don't think that way now, but I used to think that way about certain genres of music. Like, I was, "Oh, this is not real music."
I used to think that way about rap, I getcha. I don't anymore.
Exactly, same here. It's like, I can totally understand what is cool about it. Maybe even now I want to try to make that kind of track. I used to make tracks so complicated, but recently I can understand more how a simple track can be beautiful, or it can be powerful in some way, and it's maybe I want to make a simple track.
And I've noticed with not just with your music, but generally chiptune musicians who I consider really good, I can hear the emotion in their music. Because I understand, like, you know, in a live performance, it might be a little bit different. But I mean, even if it's like a rock band, if you listen to the same song on an album, it's going to be the same song. There's not going to be any change. And even with chiptune music, like, if you're performing it live, technically, you could just hit play on your track and just go from there, but you can also remix it live if you wanted to, or play, like what you do, you play guitar over it.
Yes.
And there is certain music, I think I first got into chiptune music with Anamanaguchi. Love their music. And
they're pretty good, yeah.
I can hear in certain tracks, I can hear the emotion. I don't know what emotion they're shooting for.
Yeah, but they're very good at that. Like, you, it sounds very alive. Like, it's not like just programmed. It's like this people playing the music. It sounds like that. It's probably programmed.
They do actually, when they perform live, they perform with guitars, bass, and drums. So I don't know what they like. I almost wonder if they have like some kind of distortion or thing through the guitar, so when they play a string, it makes it sound almost like very chiptune-y, which I don't know if that's even possible. I know very little about the music scene, so.
I think they just play the guitars, but I'm not sure. And then like the rest of it is programmed, but I have never seen them live, so.
I've never seen them live in person. I've watched stuff on YouTube, so I live vicariously through YouTube. What else do I got on here? I literally have a list of like 15 questions. I wasn't sure how much I like if I was going to get through all of them or whatnot. It was more just kind of like whatever I could whatever, see where the conversation would take us type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I went into a bunch of stuff of that. All right, so what's your favorite game soundtrack? Would it be Mega Man 3 like you mentioned before, or is there any other game soundtrack
that you could play? Okay, I think there are three ones that I really love, and it's Mega Man 3 is one of them. So that's my favorite track is Shadow Man.
Okay.
He's my guy. and then there is, this is probably one that people haven't played that much, Shining Force 2.
I've heard of it. I have not played it personally.
That soundtrack is, it's so good. One of my albums was, my goal was to make it as something similar to that game.
Okay.
Because this soundtrack, it's they have just a few melodies that they rearrange over the whole soundtrack, and it just gives unity to the soundtrack. Like it's one story you can hear. So I wanted one of my albums to be like that. That throughout the whole album, you didn't feel like, of course, you hear the separate track, but you can feel the connectedness, which all the songs.
Which album was that? Or is that?
It's my third EP called Potatis.
Okay.
It's Swedish for potato.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I was going to ask, I haven't listened to all of your music, but I just wanted to kind of get reacclimated with some of the stuff, because I really love when we first started emailing, the one that you linked me, the Frosty Frolic one. I haven't listened to all of that, but I really like that. I also really like, I was listening to your first EP, and I think I remember the first track correctly, it almost reminded me like a Mega Man version of Sonic music. I don't know how to, it sounded like Genesis-y, but not like...
Is that what you're going for? Well, in a way... because what I like about Genesis music is how they use a stereo delay. Mm-hmm. So, like, they play one phrase in the left speaker and then the exact same phrase in the right, but with the short interval in between, so it becomes a delay effect. And that you don't do that with an NES because you have only four tracks, but in Genesis, that technique is used a lot. So even though the sound that I'm using is not the same as on Genesis, those kind of techniques I use a lot. So it sort of sounds like Genesis.
Yeah. It sounds like a mega, like an NES Genesis track. That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. And like I don't care about how many tracks I'm using. So I have like 12 instruments or something like that mm-hmm. at the same time, but you can only play four channels at the same time.
On the NES.
That's not what I'm going for.
No, it makes sense. have you ever tried composing a music for a game?
Oh.
Or is it if there is something, you're not allowed to talk about it? I don't know.
I did something a little bit, but it never finished.
So, okay.
Yeah. Well, I haven't done it properly, yeah.
Would that be something that you would like to do, whether it's for like a AAA publisher? Okay.
It would be interesting.
I mean, there's plenty of game developers over in Japan, so I'm sure you'd be able to find someone.
Yeah, yeah. And eventually, I definitely want to do that. It's one of my goals. That would be fun. Yeah.
Okay. So not.
By the way, the third OST I really like is Final Fantasy VII. So just.
Oh. For that, yeah. That is one of my favorite soundtracks.
Yeah.
That's, of all time.
Gotta mention it. Yeah.
I always found it interesting because it was, you know, if you look at Final Fantasy VIII and IX, they had, you know, orchestras playing, but VII still kind of went back to it. wasn't quite like, you know, the Super Nintendo chiptune, but it was the
chipset
on the PlayStation. I always found that, excuse me, very odd that they decided to go with that. I guess because they were still experimenting at the time.
I like that setup a lot, Final Fantasy VII, like the instruments they're using. It's such a nice mix.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's like, I'm going to butcher his name, but Nobuo Uematsu. I like his compositions more in 8, like overall, but I like individual tracks in 7, like, if that makes more sense. I like the overall soundtrack of Final Fantasy 8 more, but if I were to like pick out an individual track of 8 versus an individual track of 7, 7 would usually win.
To be honest, I didn't play Final Fantasy 8 that much, so
you're not missing much. Actually, it's one of my
personal favorites. I never finished it.
It's one of my favorites, but it gets a bad rap because of its the magic system in it.
And the leveling system is kind of strange too.
Right? Yeah, you hit level 100 like three quarters of the way through the game, and then you're just like, well, what do I do now? But no, so to kind of shift gears a little bit, not music related, just something a little bit more like silly, I guess, like, what's your favorite kinds of foods? Was there any like things that you miss having from Sweden versus in Japan?
The other day I went to IKEA,
mm-hmm.
And I bought 1.5 kilos of meatballs. It's like I'm stocking up for the holidays. But I have actually finished like half of it because I had a home party the other day, and that didn't last long.
And then, well, you can always go back, right? So there you go. We go on.
Yeah. But meatballs and smoked salmon, man, that was really good. Food, other than that, I like most stuff. It's almost easier to say what you don't like, but here's something, I don't know if you ever tried it. You can try it in the States, I think, so probably not. It's called a yakitori, and it's a Japanese chicken barbecue.
I'm sure I could. There's a lot of like, oh my gosh, I can't think of the name now. The hibachi grills and stuff like that. But I don't know if that's just, you know, the American version of Japanese food, because, you know, our Chinese food is not really Chinese food.
Japanese Chinese food is also not really Chinese food, apparently. So it's
makes sense. And now, is there any like, oh sorry, but it's Japanese barbecue.
Yeah, it's chicken, grilled chicken of different what do you say, it's like chicken on a stick,
kebab type of thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Okay.
And different kinds, and they have they're small sticks, and you can order a lot of them, and you have drinks and whatnot. So that's something I enjoy a lot.
And what for? Just because my memory is absolutely awful. I when I'm in a conversation, I always like have to repeat things 1,000 times. What is that called again? I'm literally writing it down.
No, I only said it once, and it's Japanese, so it's probably difficult to remember. It's called a yakitori, so it's I can maybe.
I think I got it. Yakitori.
Yes, that's it.
I like I said before, I did take Japanese for 4 semesters, so I.
Oh yeah, that's right.
I have a little bit of a basis with their alphabet. The hardest thing for me is the kanji. Like, I will never for the life of me remember kanji.
That's true. For me, I don't write kanjis from memory, so it's always, you're always looking at something and then you write it.
Okay.
But as far as reading, you have to remember some to be able to read.
Well, I heard you need to know at least like 2,000 to read a newspaper or something like that.
I think if you know 2,000, then you can read anything.
Well, that's a little
comforting. So maybe 1,000 or something like that. Yeah, to read a newspaper. But yeah, I can't read everything in the newspaper because I will get stuck on some kanjis, and yeah. It's not the best system.
Well, from what I remember, and this might, hopefully the listeners find this interesting. I think it's interesting, but from what I remember, I know kanji isn't really an alphabet, but I'm just classifying it as one. But you have hiragana, katakana, yeah. And then kanji. And hiragana is Japanese words, katakana is anything foreign to Japan, yeah. And then kanji is basically Chinese. It's literally pictograph symbols. I'm pretty sure ripped directly from Chinese, just not used obviously with the same conjugations and stuff.
It's mostly the same, and then in some cases there are small differences.
Okay.
But like a Japanese person could go to China and just look at the kanjis and get an idea what it means, because there is the meaning in the kanji. They don't know how to pronounce it, but
they know that they can understand what it is because of the meaning in kanji.
Yes.
I always remembered when I took Japanese for those 4 semesters, the thing that always got me was, and I'd actually like to know this, is there really like a ton of different counting systems? So there's not just, you know, ichi, ni, san. That's just generic, but there's also stuff for like a long flat object, like a book or like paper, and then like a tall thin object, like a book or something like that. Do they still use all of those counting systems depending on what you're counting?
Yeah, they do. So there is one you can use for anything, humans. So you have one for humans, like hitori, futari, sannin. Like that's people, and then you have for anything is hitotsu, futatsu, mitsu, like that. But then, if you want to specify, and Japanese people, they usually say these other ones. They don't just say hitotsu, even though you could use it for anything. They say like one bottle of beer would be like biru ippon. So ippon is the counting word use.
Okay, that's interesting. That was the toughest, besides kanji, the conjugation and like the sentence structure didn't confuse me, even though I'm still not great at it.
Yeah, that's pretty easy.
The way I described it in my head, the way I kind of made it, had it make sense in my head, is it kind of sounded like Yoda almost, but not quite. Because the verb would always come at the end of the sentence, which I always found interesting. So I loved learning Japanese. I actually still have all of my books, and I remember most of the. What's weird is it's not weird. I remember most of the katakana, but I don't remember any of the hiragana. So because it's been like five years since I was in college.
If I'm on the spot, I can't remember some katakana, hiragana signs sometimes because I don't write it that often. I always write it on my phone or on the computer. So, like, if I just need to write some name or something, and sometimes I forget, yeah.
The one thing I did really love about it, though, is I loved because I took German in high school as well. I don't remember any German other than like I remember how to say I have a pencil and I have a pen. That's about it.
very good.
That's not going to help me in Germany, though. But
no. Funny thing, that's the one English phrase they learn in Japanese or in Japan. Yeah.
What English phrase?
In English, I have a pen.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is that Because they was
no wait, this is a pen. That's
this is a pen. Okay.
Yeah, this is
that's a pen. Interesting.
I have a pen. That's the song.
Yeah, I Gotaro.
Yeah, yeah.
The internet sensation.
Oh man,
he's no,
so good. Oh yeah, sorry.
Is he really popular in Japan?
These days, I have no idea.
Okay. I'm always fascinated.
Actually, I don't know anything about him. I just know there was this song.
The song, what was I gonna say? The one thing I guess to kind of wrap up the language talk of it, but what I always really liked that fact that there's no genders on their nouns, because when I took German, everything had a gender. You know, a chair could be masculine, and a door could be feminine, and a TV could be neuter. And I hated that because I hated having to memorize, besides remembering how to conjugate them. Well,
that's one of the good things with the English, is you don't have that at all.
Yeah.
It's like for verbs or for nouns, you have none of that. And that's, it just makes it easier to learn.
Makes it so, I know English also has its own drawbacks of, you know, how many homonyms and stuff like that we have.
The thing with English, that is confusing is the spelling. Spelling and pronunciation, they don't always match. It can be confusing for... I was teaching English, actually, to some Japanese students. And, yeah, they think it's pronounced one way because it would make sense if you go by a certain rule or something. Mm. But, yeah, it's... You have so many pronunciations for one way of spelling a word. So that is the most confusing thing with English, I think. Yeah,
I can understand that completely. From what my observations are, granted, I am a native English speaker, so it's not quite as helpful as someone who had to teach themselves the language or taught the language to what their observations would be. But I've noticed that a lot of the words, it's very context based. So depending on what's happening in the sentence determines how you read that word, even though it could be spelled the same. So for example, lead and lead are spelled exactly the same way, but lead is, you know, a stuff you put in your pencil, or a lead brick, or Led Zeppelin, but that's spelled differently. And then lead is spelled exactly the same way, but that's a verb, you know, to lead someone. But it's spelled exactly the same way. So it's very much based on the context of the sentence, and I guess its position, because if lead is a noun and lead is a verb, it'd be placed differently in the sentence.
Yeah, there are probably some languages that have even more of that. I can't think if Japanese have a lot of that. Because you can always differentiate it with the kanji, but as far as just pronunciation goes, you don't always know what it means. You have to look at the context, yeah.
Mm. Now, which language are you... Do you speak more than those three languages, or do you...
No, that's it. I was thinking, like, do I speak some? No. would be German, but no, I don't speak German.
How far off is German from Swedish? Like, I know you guys are, I don't even, is Sweden next to Europe? I have no context of geography.
So Sweden is in Northern Europe, and, Germany is below Sweden, so we have a sea dividing countries. But so Swedish is pretty similar to German, except the whole grammar. That you have to conjugate verbs.
Are there no do nouns not have genders in Swedish?
We have two genders that are both, how do you say, neuter?
Okay.
Neutral. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but in German you have three, like the neutral one and the feminine and masculine.
And masculine.
But yeah, Swedish is also confusing in that sense.
Oh my goodness, language is nuts to me. I'm fascinated. Sorry, I didn't mean to go on a tangent with it, but I'm always fascinated by it, even though I can only speak English.
The work I'm doing now as a full-time job is I'm an audio editor for a company where we make language content for our website. So like 34 different languages. So I get to listen to different languages every day. So language is very interesting to me.
Well, then I feel a little bit better going on that tangent, because I've always been fascinated by language, and I literally talk to people at work all the time about the differences that you know between different languages that I know, and I only know very little. I can't speak any other language fluently other than English. So I know very little about all the others, but I still remember like a little bit of Japanese and whatnot.
Right.
Oh my gosh, there was another question I had that it was right in the same vein of that. Now I cannot remember of it for the life of me. Yeah. All right. I'll just have to move on. If it comes back to me, I'll awkwardly interrupt the episode and
Anytime is a good time to awkwardly interrupt.
So I guess as kind of like a wrap-up question, because we've been talking for almost an hour now, and I have to go to work soon too. It's early in the morning for me.
It's been an hour.
I know, right? It's gone by fast. So the name Robot Prinz.
Where
did it come from? And two, I did actually read, at least on your first EP, the storyline behind, like, kind of like the story you have going on. So which came first? Was it the story or the name? I guess just go into detail with that.
So the name came first, and my cousin, I talked it over with him. I was saying, okay, so I'm gonna make a chiptune album, but I need an artist name. And then he said, "How about the Little Prince?"
Okay.
And I said, "I don't know. It sounds kind of off." And the reason why he mentioned Prince is because in Japan, I had this experience when I was teaching English. Since I'm blonde and I'm blue-eyed and kind of tall, they sort of thought I looked like a prince, I suppose.
Okay.
So before one of the staff at this school I was teaching at introduced me to the class, she said, okay, now you're... teacher is going to be the prince that I've been telling you about. Like, so my nickname behind the scenes was Prince, apparently. And I just thought that was funny. So I mentioned that to my cousin. So that's how the prince thing came about. But I said, well, the Little Prince, it just doesn't feel like me. But I wanted to have something to do with chiptune too. So then I think he or I said it, Robot Prince. Yeah, that would probably work. And then he wrote this story about Robot Prince that's on the first EP, and also the other albums have stories of a Robot Prince adventure.
And was that written by your cousin? You said cousin, right? Yeah,
my cousin Alex.
That's really cool. Then I saw that you had like the story.
He's such a funny guy. Yeah. So. He has a great sense for writing stories.
It felt very like classic games vibe, like not in a bad way. Like it felt really, I liked reading the story. I didn't read all of them, mind you. I read the first EPs and that's all I really had time for, but I do intend to read more of it.
Yeah, no, it's fun. The second one is maybe the funniest. Yeah, Revenge 101.
I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So I guess to wrap up our conversation today, again, thank you so much for coming onto the show. I really enjoyed this.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And if you ever want to come back on, please. I mean, I might ask definitely. You first, but so I think I went through actually all the questions that I had. So I guess just to wrap up, do you have anything that you want to plug? I believe you have a new album coming out soon.
Oh yeah, I'll mention that. So next year in April, I am going to release my second collaboration album called Friend Force 2. Mm-hmm. So, and this one is going to be, this is the one I'm most excited about anything I've done so far, because so it's 8 other artists except me, and I'm making songs with each one of them, and I'm also making a theme song for the thing. And this is what I'm most excited about, is we're doing a music video.
Yeah.
And it's going to be so good. We have this Japanese animator who is,
I was about to ask, is it animated or not? I'm looking forward to this.
And it's so good. Like, we have a demo on let's see, what can you, if you, it's up on YouTube, not on my channel though, but if you type Friend Force and Wabi Sabita, it should come up.
Is it on your Twitter handle? Is it on your Twitter? Is there a link on your Twitter?
Yeah. Yes. And I could actually post it now after our conversation, so the listeners can check it out.
Excellent.
Oh well, that would be in a few days. Yeah.
But no, that's awesome though. And you, so it's 8 other collaborators besides yourself.
Yes.
So is there going to be a total of 8 tracks on it plus an intro track, or is it going to be longer?
Yeah,
than that?
Yeah.
That's, so, I mean, that's so still nine, a lot nine of music. Tracks. That's
nine tracks, that's crazy. And it's YMCK is the one. I started making chiptune. A lot of reason is because I like YMCK, and now I'm making a song with them. So that's super exciting for me.
It's,
but there's the other awesome people there are also, all of them are great, and it's, I'm excited about all the songs. Yeah.
How many are there, like, is it all like Japanese chiptune composers, or you kind of go from
half,
all over the
half
place?
Half and half about. Yeah, I think there's five Japanese and 3 from, one from Sweden, one from Australia, and one from Argentina.
That's amazing. I love how far chiptune music has spread. That's awesome.
Yeah.
This is more of like an off chance. I don't know if you can even answer it, but is Yujiko or Snail's House on that?
No. Oh, yeah, man.
That's the only other Japanese chiptune composer that I know.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't. Is Snail's House Japanese?
Yeah, I'm Yujiko, Snail's House. I'm there. If you go to, I guess he's a him. But if you go,
it makes sense. Yeah. Oh man.
Yeah. Yeah, he's Japanese. I don't know where in Japan. I'm pretty sure on his Bandcamp page it says that it says Japan. So.
Yeah. Oh no, no, I've been listening a lot to Snail's House recently. Actually, yeah, that's really good. Really. Nice songs, yeah.
It's almost like storybook chiptune. Like, it sounds like a, I don't know how to describe it, like a, it reminds me of like a fairy tale type of thing. I don't know if I'm really describing it well, but it, I don't know, that's what the vibe I get from it anyway.
Yeah. Wow. Just solid I don't even know if you would call it chiptune. It is probably chiptune, but it's like this kind of future bass, a lot of it.
Yeah.
But it's, yeah, very, very nice.
But,
I love listening to that. Yeah.
So what do you, so besides, so you have your new album coming out in April, Friend Force 2. Where can the people find you online? What's your social media? What are your social media handles?
So Twitter, at Robot Prince, Robot Prince is not spelled as you would spell robot and prince in English. It's one word, and instead of C E in the end, it's an S. So R O B O T P R I N S. And if you search that on Facebook, Twitter, not on Instagram. Well, Facebook and Twitter, yeah. And I have Bandcamp, I have SoundCloud. What else is there? Yeah. You can find my music on Spotify. If you use Spotify, you can listen there.
So everyone go check out Robot Prinz with an S, Prinz, on all those places, Bandcamp, Spotify, SoundCloud. Give him a buy his music, follow him on.
Hey, we forgot to swear. I just I heard you were almost doing it there.
Excuse me. As for my social media stuff, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. I keep forgetting to plug my own website, but it's StillLoadingPodcast.com. You can check the stuff out there. I still need to eventually blog on that. I don't know if I'm ever going to, but there's a blog there that I eventually will or will not. I don't know. I'll figure that out. But
can I say something? I really enjoyed that Mega Man 3 podcast you did.
Oh, thank you.
That was really nice. Yeah, it took me back. It's it was fun to just hear two dudes talk about that for like 30 minutes and dissecting the game and the music and stuff. Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
Thank you. My friend who was on it, he's the one that he's the biggest Mega Man fan I know. So every time I'm going to be doing a Mega Man episode, I'm hoping to do one on the first two games and eventually the rest of the series. But that's down the line. I don't even know when that's going to be coming. But thank you. Thank you so much. That's really nice to hear.
Yeah, I did, by the way, a short thing. I did a Mega Man 3 medley on a show once, playing the guitar to some of my favorite tracks from that OST. So
can you find that on YouTube anywhere? Or?
Oh, do I have it on YouTube? Probably not. No, I don't have it anywhere. But oh man, yeah, I should have uploaded that.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure someone might have posted it somewhere. You said it was at a live show, right?
Yeah,
I'm sure someone might.
It's on Twitter somewhere. Some of it, but yeah, it's not gonna be easy to find.
You might have sent me the tweet in an email. If I still have it, I will do my best. I will find it and post it on my Twitter when this episode drops.
Awesome! Yeah. That would be good.
But, all right. So thank you all once again for listening. Just some quick shout outs. I normally give a ton at the end of the episode, but it's still early for me and I'm tired. So shout out to the network I joined, the Podbeard Network. You can catch out a lot of amazing podcasts and Twitch streamers and YouTubers on there. So just go to the website, podbeardnetwork.com. A couple quick shout outs to good friends of the show, The Apex and The Abyss, one of my favorite true crime podcasts, No Geeks Allowed. That's KNOW, No Geeks Allowed. Also, Drinks with Larry, Christian and Damon's Amazing Nerd Show. I'm blanking. There's like one other that I just can't remember now. I apologize for all my friends who I missed, but it's early, so forgive me. That should wrap everything up. So Philip, Robot Prinz, thank you once again for joining me.
Thank you, Josh. It was a pleasure being on your podcast.
And that should wrap it up. So I will see you all next time.